Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson, and sitting across from me, after a bit of a hiatus, he's dressed like Noel Edmonds but smells like fresh biscuits. It's my long-lost darling, Mr. Ian Morris.
Okay, did you know I'd be wearing a floral shirt?
Yes.
Or did you rewrite that script when I came in?
You're one of my best friends, but you are the second best Noel Edmonds. Underneath the blanket, he is a man of many mysteries and a thousand smiles. But with 1,001 smiles under her own garment or kimono, it's Marta Svetek.
Oh, hi.
And Marta is going to be joining us for the entire show, and we're going to talk a little bit about virtual reality, about motion capture, about what it's like to don a black suit, be covered in white spots. She does a lot of motion capture work, acting, voice acting, all sorts of stuff.
In fact, you listeners may know her voice.
Oh, yes. Also, Marta is the voice, the sultry voice of our Patreon promotion that people on the free feed will hear, but the patrons won't because we don't include that.
That is true. I feel like I should do the whole podcast just like this.
Well, when we recorded those promos, I had to leave the room at one point because we couldn't stop laughing.
So much joviality.
Ian, I've missed you dearly. It's felt like
leprosy.
Walking around but not having any underwear on. You know, it's not that you're totally uncomfortable with the situation, but you can just tell something's radically different.
You're missing something.
You can miss,
basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, I've missed you too.
Thank you.
And I'm very sorry that I haven't been around.
That's accepted. We're going to start with some pseudo news, i.e. something that came out nearly 2 weeks ago that I want to talk about because we haven't done a podcast for 2 weeks. And in fact, when I read a couple of weeks ago that Valve was making another Half-Life game, I felt like a horse that had been very nervously waiting for, let's say, 12 years for a fatal trip to a glue factory, only to be told as the hooves hit the heat that it was time to ride again. Because Half-Life and its sequels are amongst the highest rated games of all time, certainly some of my
very, very good games.
Favorite games of all time.
Half-Life 2 is spectacular.
Yes, and after a planned 3-part story arc stalled once Part 2 was released in 2007, the question of whether Valve had given up on its franchise has worried Half-Life lovers such as you and I as much as the doomed pony I alluded to just a few moments ago. But then something else happened. Valve said that Half-Life Alyx, as the new game due out next spring is called, will be exclusively a title to be played in virtual reality headsets.
Boo!
So think back to our friend the horse, the obligate nasal breather. He was told, you will not be glue today, as you need to ride again. And he was excited. But then, of course, he was told, you'll be riding on the moon, where it's expensive, very few people have access to what you're doing, and there's very low gravity indeed. And you became deeply troubled. That is my extended metaphor, my equine metaphor that I'm going to kill now, because frankly, it's tiring to make up, and it's, I'm sure, tiring, even more tiring to hear.
Yes.
My point was, I'm very excited about there being a new Half-Life game after more than a decade, and I don't think retired horses should be sent to the moon. So, Half-Life's
Agreed.
Coming back, Ian, like the Sugar Babes or Motley Crue, or you, in fact.
Oh, right.
You've returned.
Okay, yeah, that is true.
Yep. We're not going off on another tangent. Half-Life, new Half-Life, but in VR and VR only. And that's the actual meat and potatoes of this little dinner here.
Right, great. Yeah, I mean, I find that a little bit disappointing, if I'm going to be completely honest.
Okay.
Because I don't have VR. And now I'm not opposed to VR, but I'm also unlikely to get out my wallet and pay for a VR system. Not without a really good reason.
You see, that's where the moon metaphor came from in my ridiculous little rant. I think. It's hard to know for sure, even myself. But I think that's what I meant, is that it's something brilliant, but very few people are going to have access to. But for something that has the draw of Half-Life, which really made Valve, like, that's what it was. Steam was a mandatory install in, like, 2003 when you bought Half-Life 2. Like, you had to install Steam.
There was a fuss about it, if I recall.
There was, because most people were on dial-up connections at the time, and it was very difficult. But that's where Steam came from. Obviously, Valve has gone on to do arguably bigger and not necessarily better things, but certainly greater things.
Well, they've made more money.
Certainly have. And everyone's been wanting Half-Life 3, Half-Life 3. Well, this isn't Half-Life 3 because chronologically it takes place between Half-Life 1 and 2.
That's right, Barney. This is a red letter day. We'll inaugurate the new teleport with a double transmission.
You mean it's working? For real this time? Because I still have nightmares about that cat.
No, no. There's nothing to be nervous about.
What cat?
We've made major strides since then. Major strides.
What cat?
It is going to be a full-size game. It's not...
It actually is, isn't it?
It is.
So it is going to be... Oh, okay.
It is. And I've seen some previews of it, and the gloves that you have in the hands and the vision in your head, like they said that they physically couldn't map what they're trying to do to a keyboard and mouse. It has to be VR. I find that hard to believe, but I reckon this could be the thing that gets people to buy VR and embed in the VR thing simply because they want to play more Half-Life. Marta, did you play Half-Life? Was it your street?
I didn't finish it. No, I didn't finish it. I did play some of it. I'm in between opinions here because part of me thinks VR and everything, VR gaming, what was keeping it back was the lack of great content. Mm. And here's people coming with great content. Like one of the really good recent releases is from N-Dreams is Phantom something. Oh my God, I can't remember. Like Recon is this great kind of stealth game that's in VR. And actually, one thing that really bugs me with the trailer of Half-Life, Alex, is the whole disembodied hands. I can't get over that in VR. I've played a lot of VR games, and it's just, I can't get over it. So that kind of breaks the immersion for me. But let's say, okay, fine, that's all great. Great content is coming. It's, and, you know, the tech is getting cheaper, and operative word cheaper, not cheap.
Yes.
And I've already spent a lot of money on a PC rig, and I'm supposed to spend more money on a console, not just one, but two, and then this.
Nice.
And I just don't actually have the time to also play. So they're not just dealing with the barrier of a small install base. They're dealing with a barrier of people's time. Now, people are going to go through the trouble to actually buy a VR platform for this game that's been not really a thing for a long time, for 12 years.
Mm.
They've lost a lot of the excitement. Yes, there's a certain amount of people are going to be super excited, but there is a huge player base that's evolved since then. They have no idea what Half-Life is.
I've not really thought about it like that, but you're right. There are now people in secondary education who were just a drunken mistake in their parents' bedroom. At the point that we were playing the most recent episode of Half-Life.
Yeah.
That is very interesting. I do think that Valve has left it long enough that it did have to do something quite different to immediately rekindle joy and bring in new players to a franchise that really is not actually that accessible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a story, it's a first-person shooter about a quantum scientist dealing with interdimensional dilemmas and all kinds of scientific stuff. Like, it's not your brain-dead Call of Duty sort of thing, nor is it the kind of big open world environment that's become very popular with Witcher and Elder Scrolls
Destiny
and, Destiny, which I know you two play Destiny a lot. And
of course.
That'll be relevant probably later.
But...
Yeah, I was just going to say, we don't know if Valve can actually still make games. Like, we don't know if they're... Because that team is long gone, right? So
the writing team for the game, I think, is gone. But Valve has a very interesting setup. You know, they have desks on wheels with little clips on the sides. And there's a manual that I've seen that's like a new employee's handbook. And the manual says, you know, go and work on whatever you want to work on. The reason your desks are all on wheels and interconnected is so you can literally detach it and go and work on another team. There's no... Yeah. It's a very flat structure.
That doesn't mean that anyone there is a game builder.
No, what I mean is that it could just as easily be that there are people that did work on Half-Life that splintered off and ended up working on something else.
I'm with you.
That have got together and decided to do this new VR thing. So it's not necessarily that the spirit of what made Half-Life is gone. It just may manifest itself in a new way.
Okay. Right. Sorry, Marta. You were
going to
say.
No, absolutely. I mean, really, it's definitely a game with a very interesting story, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be open world or whatever. The main thing is that the story is interesting. And at the same time, I know at least from a performer's side, there's a lot of very, very top talent that's actually involved in this game. Yeah. So they really just do amazing things with stories. And on the writing team, there's also some really good guys. So I don't doubt that it's going to be an interesting story to play. To me, it's just, is it going to be good enough to be worth my time next to everything I already played?
And having to buy a VR headset. I don't know. I think probably, based on my experience with Half-Life 2, I would say it is... I don't finish a lot of games, but I finished Half-Life 2. And I would say that that's a testament to it, how compelling it was as a story. I mean, it's a million times better than Half-Life, which is quite hard to finish.
Yes, Half-Life is actually very difficult to finish. It's a game I love playing the first half of.
Quarter.
Well, I have a question for you guys, actually.
Yes.
Do you find it weird to play VR alone in your room without people around you?
Well, I don't have it, so... But in theory, no.
I've played it... The most I've done in VR is when I've used the Vive... No, the HTC... Vive. Yeah, the HTC Vive at Andy's house. He had one of those set up. You know, it has all the things in the corners of the room and tracking you. And there was one in particular I played where you're... I think you're an eagle, or you're supposed to be sitting on the back of an eagle, just flying through this... photorealistic, pixel-perfect rendition of Paris, I think it is. And that is, I mean, it's wonderfully fun and super compelling, but it's quite fun both being watched and watching someone else do it. I wouldn't play that game alone.
Yeah.
But I've not really...
Part of the fun is watching and being watched because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah. But I really don't know with this. It totally depends how it's executed.
Well, I had a headset at home, and I now, you know, live without flatmates and all that. I'm all, you know, adulting and stuff. The main weirdness for me was the sensory deprivation for what's happening around me when there's nobody else in the house. It's really, really weird. And for me, that's always going to be a barrier to getting a VR headset. Is it going to be like something that I only touch when I have people in the house? And then it's kind of like you have to swap because you can't be in there 3 hours playing and people just be like, okay, fine.
Yeah, and this is not the sort of game that's going to lend itself to being played with other people, is it? So it's not the sort of thing where you're going to have mates around to watch you play Half-Life.
That's true.
That's an interesting point.
I will be very interested to see how the streaming community reacts to this, because while they say you can only interact with it in VR, maybe there's a huge opportunity looming for watching other people play it in a non-VR environment.
Maybe. I watch... what's that game called? Keep Talking... and Nobody Explodes or something like that.
Yeah.
Do you know the one I mean?
Yeah.
And that is available both as a normal game and as a VR game. And I've watched people do it as VR, as on streams, and it's extremely entertaining.
Yeah, I've been watching quite a lot of Twitch games really recently, but mostly it's been esports stuff, you know, League of Legends. I tried to understand the language of League of Legends because I've been working on a lot of professional esports coverage at Bloomberg in my day job, and in order to do that justice, you really need to kind of be embedded in the culture. Anyway, point is, what was the point? Don't know. VR, Half-Life. Will the pull of the Half-Life name, its legacy, be enough to convince people to invest in a very high-end PC? Because we've seen the minimum specs, and it's not insignificant by any stretch of the imagination.
It's better now than it was. I think most gaming computers that have been bought within the last 3 years would be easier.
No.
Really?
I don't think so, no.
Absolutely.
Oh, really?
Not.
No, I mean, we're seriously high-end stuff needed.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I'm still obsessing over rigs. You know that.
I'm
obsessing over various hardware and everything. I keep wanting to upgrade my computer even though I don't need to. But I think you're looking at about $2,000-$2,500 easily.
I think
easily.
So.
I will probably be watching somebody else play this. I will probably not play it myself. That's the big difference. And I actually find VR games entertaining to watch, and particularly in the horror game genre, it's great to watch other people play them when it's not as terrifying for you.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to fall into that genre. So I don't see this actually being a huge commercial success.
Well, let us know any thoughts, of course, that you have. hello@uktechshow.com. Will you be investing in an all-expensive VR rig in order to play what may be the greatest game of all time?
We'll be right back.
An advert featuring a woman diving into a Deliveroo delivery bag to retrieve multiple food orders has been banned, the BBC wrote this week. The Advertising Standards Authority said it might mislead viewers to think they could order food from different restaurants to be delivered together. The ASA received 300 complaints, the third highest of the year so far, according to the BBC writer. Deliveroo said the advert was about emphasising choice. Now, the advert in question showed a woman taking a delivery from a driver at a front door and then distributing meals from a variety of different restaurants around the house from a single bag. Complainants said that it didn't specify that the restaurants needed to be ordered from separately. There was on-screen text, but the ASA said that the overall impression was that you could get all this stuff delivered at once. Now, there was a separate write-up from Gizmodo that was very critical of the ASA's decision, and it said, quote, this is the Gizmodo write-up, quote, if you were hoodwinked by the campaign, you probably also believe that a geriatric old man can deliver presents to kids the world over in the span of one night with the help of some aeronautically inclined caribou. And, quote, for the record, you can't actually dive into your Deliveroo bag, however hungry you are. Now, it's very rare that I take issue with snarky write-ups because I like Gizmodo. And in fact, you used to write for Gizmodo.
I did, and I used to do snarky write-ups.
Yeah, but I have to say, I'm actually much, much more with the ASA here because I heard a version of this ad in an Uber, I think it was, a few weeks ago. And I remember saying to whoever I was with, I think it might have been Andy, I was going to an all-night Taylor Swift rave somewhere.
Good God.
Yeah, and I think I turned around and said to him, good luck to anyone who thinks they'd actually be able to have all those restaurants deliver at the same time, because I thought that ad made it sound like that was totally plausible. I was like, not a chance. Like, could you imagine?
But also, no one's actually going to ever want to do that, are they?
That's not the point.
Well, is it not the point, though?
Have you ever ordered from even two Deliveroo restaurants at the same time?
No.
No.
I don't believe anyone does that. I do get what they're saying.
I've wanted to.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Sure. Yeah. But I do get what they're saying. In that, I mean, you could do it with, if there were, say, five people at your house and everyone wanted separate delivery, they could just get their own, and then a bunch of Deliveroo drivers will turn up, or riders or whatever. But that's pandering to the people who have to have everything presented to them entirely literally.
No. I wanted to use this as a little bit of a segue into what to me seems like an obvious tech solution. Why can't you do that? The whole point of Deliveroo is that it's basically a software backend for multiple restaurants integrated into a single platform that facilitates ease of use for customer and easy delivery systems for restaurants, right? There is no reason, I don't think, that this shouldn't be considered the best possible idea for Deliveroo to use in the future.
I get what you're saying, but the problem with that is food needs to be hot most of the time.
Yeah.
And it's going to be very difficult for restaurants that are not connected to one another to simultaneously cook that food at the same time.
I disagree. Whenever you order from Deliveroo, it says ahead of time the estimated time of delivery for your order. I don't think there's any reason at all why two drivers, and yes, it would require multiple deliveries, but then Deliveroo has this Deliveroo Plus thing that it tries to get you to subscribe to of unlimited deliveries. This would be a great use for that, because then you wouldn't have to think about multiple payments. You would just think, okay, well, because I'm a fussy eater, maybe I want fish and chips. Maybe you're round at mine and you want a curry or something. Maybe Andy was round and wants Italian. So you go on Deliveroo and you say, I want this Italian dish from, you know, place that sells pizza, another one for curry, another one for fish and chips. And the software and the technology does it in the back end.
I'm sure that's possible.
Make sure that it's delivered within a rough margin of similarity.
I mean, it's certainly possible, but I don't find those delivery estimates that accurate anyway.
Yeah, that's the big one. Problem. They're not accurate.
You know, sometimes it'll say an hour and it'll turn up in 15 minutes. Sometimes it'll say 15 minutes and it'll be an hour.
I lived in Zone 1, yeah, they were pretty accurate. Yeah. But now that I don't, you know, there's a big, big difference the second you leave like a restaurant hotspot in terms of delivery times. Now, I'd be totally fine with, you know, okay, I have multiple restaurants going here. I'll get the stuff when I get the stuff, hopefully soon, but it'll have to be different deliveries, different delivery guys. You know, some people are saying it should be in the same delivery. I'm like, most of your stuff will be.
That wouldn't work because you'd physically have to drive 2 miles to a different restaurant. This only works if you have multiple delivery drivers.
Yeah. Maybe when the drones come, maybe then.
Maybe.
Dawson in the chat room, in our live chat right now, says that they get a delivery of Chinese and then a pudding place, and it comes at different times. So that's two restaurants.
You just place two orders.
Yeah.
That's it. You just place two orders. But on the write-up, actually, I agree with you, Nate, because I'm thinking the ranty writer kind of missed the point of the ban. They kind of missed, are you that stupid that you think that you're going to leap into a delivery bag and get everything? Like, no, but there is a serious misrepresentation of what the service offers. Now, you will find out eventually when you go into Deliveroo, like, that you can't do that, and oh, so sad. Oh, no, then you won't use it if you're not happy with it. But still, if you're going to actually put this message out, you have to be a little bit more responsible. Speaking as a marketer as well as many
yes,
other things.
Okay. But yeah, that's fair.
You need to accurately portray what your service is. I mean, to be honest, as a business or as a marketing, if I was on that team and to have to deal with the deluge of people ranting about the misrepresentation, even that already makes it not worth it.
Yeah, that's a really solid point.
I'm like, people will complain. They'll let you know about it before they'll let the ASA know about it.
Very true.
Richard in the chat room also supports your argument about this being a city versus out of city thing and says, I'd be happy just to have a single restaurant who'll deliver to our house, a downside of living in the countryside.
Yeah.
It's very true. You get out of the cities and these services are not... I mean, I don't live in London. I live just outside of London and we have a choice of 11 restaurants on our local Deliveroo, and Deliveroo's only been with us for less than a year.
Yeah, same with me. I mean, I'm maybe not closer to London than you, but...
You're in Surbiton.
I'm in zone, what is it, 6? What are you?
Surbiton's not zone 6,
it is.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow. But Tom and Barbara Good back in the day had a long travel to get to Mayfair on that one time they did that thing. I don't know what... I'm not in a zone, I don't think. Maybe 9.
Well, okay, so that says a lot then. I'm in a zone, you're not, which suggests that... I mean, but I haven't had it, and I'm technically in the travel zone. So, you know, it's taken them a long time to roll that service out. I get the sense that maybe Deliveroo's not... I don't think they wanted to just blast money into... you know, making this thing happen. So anyway, but that's not really the point, is it?
It's all the point. It's just not as good as mine or Marta's.
Okay, all right. Well, that wasn't the main thrust of my point.
No, it wasn't. Tell me more about your thrust.
I'm not sure if I want to.
Oh, all right.
I mean, only because I think we've done enough of it.
We have.
It warrants exactly lots more conversation. And
My intention to talk about a complaint about an advert was to talk about, is that not actually a really good idea using technology? And I think we've established that it mostly is, but it will be a problem for the foreseeable future. But I think other people will have views. hello@uktechshow.com. That's where you should send them. Marta.
Hi.
You're still here.
I am.
I'm very pleased.
I'm awake too.
And
just for you.
There are several things I think it's worth knowing about Marta. One, she owns, and this is true, I believe, she owns more swords than dinner plates.
I'm getting there. I'm almost at the same number. I made a sword this year, so that's a special one.
See, I didn't even know that ahead of time.
That counts for two.
Okay.
I smithed the sword with these hands right here.
Amazing. Two, she's toured with the metal band Sepultura. And I know that for a fact because we went to one of the shows together.
Yeah.
And three.
Can vouch.
She was the only woman to come on my stag do, which to American listeners, that's a bachelor. Is it bachelor party?
Oh, so yeah,
bachelor party. But most important than all that, she's a motion capture actor, voiceover artist, and a million other things. One of the coolest people in the world. And by pure coincidence, I was playing Red Dead Redemption 2 this week, only a year late, but thanks to Black Friday, I did get it for about 20 quid and was really blown away, in particular, by the motion capture detail used by some of the in-game characters. Ian.
Was out on PC and you played it on a console a year late?
Yes.
Ugh.
Well, I have a job.
I know, but there's no excuse for that.
No, I know there isn't.
We have jobs.
Ian didn't for the lion's share of the last year. He didn't. He was
have a job.
Yeah.
Well, I had a job. It just wasn't a go to work job. It was just a sort of sit in your pants at home job.
I'm just teasing. I just didn't get around to playing it that much. Yeah. But there was one particular scene that really struck me this week when I was playing. It's don't worry, people. It's spoilers are not a coming. You're in a theatre in one of the cities in the game. And you can sit there if you want and watch this entire performance. It takes about 15 odd minutes. And it's like a variety show. There's some music. There's a drummer. And I was watching the drummer, the virtual drummer, in the back of the little set of actors on stage in this non-critical mission that you didn't even have to sit all the way through. And I was watching the drummer. And I'm a drummer. I've played the drums for 30 years. Nearly. And so I was watching with a very critical eye, and I was amazed because all the rudiments, all the little flourishes, it all lined up, it was accurately represented, and I thought, there are very, 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 very few people in the world who are going to be nerdy enough and a drummer to notice that and think, amazing. And then, but we'd already arranged for Marta to come on the show, who's done a lot of motion capture stuff in her interesting history, and so I thought, let's talk about what it's like to do motion capture. So what's it like to do motion capture? All right, I'll put it a different way. Was I correct to be so in awe of motion capture artistry from that scene?
I mean, it's really a testament to how this has evolved. You know, it is there for you. It's for the person who knows the difference, right? And it's such a huge player base, and so many different people play games now that adding those details, you know, like you said, not everybody's going to notice that that's correct, but it's for you. And clearly that animator was a drummer. But they will these days, then even for these NPCs, get a drummer in. Maybe it's just one of the animators, but they will actually record that movement, especially when on a AAA game that has a big budget, right? Because motion capture is extremely expensive. But it saves time, therefore money in certain cases, so you kind of balance it out. But it's crazy because not that long ago, they would have a couple of actors, or specifically mocap performers. You know, a lot of people are still like, oh, is that acting, whatever. Like, motion capture encompasses so many different types of performance that it's hard to just, you know, just dismiss one and accept the other. But it would be just a couple people who would basically do everything from the main characters and the in-game animations, because surprise, surprise, every movement that you tell the character to do has to be captured with motion capture if that's what you're going with. So every turn, like you'll do every 45 degree turn as you go around in standing and in a combat pose, and then you'll do it again as a crouch animation, and you're just like,
I was going to mention the crouching, because we were playing Destiny, weren't we?
Oh, and my God.
You raised this as an issue, because basically crouching animations are torture.
Well, basically, there's in the different like types of motion capture that you do, you have for in-game animations, you do what you could call a locomotion shoot. So you're not going to have a head cam. They're not going to be capturing face or voice. You're not going to be saying any lines. You're just going to be doing these short animations. And there's that's very technical. So there's certain performers that do that. And there's a lot of mocap actors that just don't even go there. But back in the day, that was kind of your bread and butter as a mocap performer. I'm saying as if I've been doing that for that long. But let's say the people that taught me, that's how they kind of did the thing. And, you know, you then spend days on a set running and sprinting until they have four steps that they can use and all that. And the same thing happens with crouch animations. And I don't care how fit you think you are. I don't care how many squats you do or what you bench or whatever. The day you do crouch animations will break you. It will break you. Like, you will not be able to walk the next day.
Wow.
It is absolutely... But I mean, the results are great, but for the love of God, put those at the end, because if you want to do a walking cycle after a crouch cycle...
You're going to get a poor walking cycle.
Yeah, you're not going to get anything, because you're going to be walking on something seriously wrong with you. So it's, you know, everything from planning to performance, and yes, it is important to get an actor in that suit doing even those what would be quite, you know, banal things, because every little movement, and, you know, technically you spend more time looking at those animations and that performance that you do with cinematics. So those are super important to also have the character in it. The way you position your shoulders, the way your hips move when you walk. That's why in older games where they would just have, well, the guys on set already to do all the guy things, and we only have like maybe couple of shots with women dude, you're also now playing all the women, and you see the really weird walking. That's usually because the guy trying to move their hips like a woman.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UKTech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
What kind of instructions do you get from a mocap director if you were to play a drum scene, for example?
I think for that, because it clearly was an NPC,
yeah,
they would just say, play, and it's clearly synced to the song, play the song. Now, they wouldn't use any of the live recording because it's almost like playing to pre-record audio. Like, what a lot of people don't know, also because, and this is one of my sort of gripes, I thankfully haven't been the victim of this that much, but the voice actor and the body, the voice and the body are usually two different people. And the voice actor will usually get the main credit for the character. And there's, you know, this mocap actor that did all the body. And what you'll do is normally the voice actor will do their lines. And then you will do motion capture within the space that, you know, the animators have designed, the environment artists have designed, to pre-recorded audio. So they might have a head cam on, but they won't be doing any kind of, they won't be capturing any audio or anything. And you have to kind of move around in time, hit certain marks in time and everything. Now,
would you be expected to sync that for you? Would you be expected to read the lines?
It doesn't matter that much.
Right, okay.
I mean, yes, because you kind of need to know exactly what you're saying when to act.
Yeah.
Right? So you need to know your lines. But, you know, you usually won't hear that until you get to set and it's time for that shot. So you try to pick it up as quickly as possible. And if you fluff up a word, it doesn't matter. But ultimately, you'll do that and then they'll sync up the time codes. And motion capture, even though, you know, people think it's all captured, all neat and everything, and then you just put it into a character and that's done, that's a huge misconception. It takes a village to go from motion capture into what is a fully and correctly animated character. You know, motion capture data is literally just dots. The dots on your body, and that's, I mean, there are other types of mocap systems, but the most famous one and the most widely used ones is this optical passive system where you have all these cameras around you, you have the dots, and it's you can have multiple people in the scene. You, like, the computer will know where in the relation to the space you are. You know, it saves a lot of headaches in that respect. But at all times, for any one point to read, at least two cameras need to see that marker. That's not always the case. Just imagine crossing your arms in front of your body. You're covering a bunch of markers. So the data is not going to be perfect. Somebody needs to clean it up and basically look at other references and see where the marker that was lost is and manually place it back and correct that. They need to then make any adjustments. For example, if you were holding a gun in a cinematic where you have a head cam, and it's a rifle and you're supposed to lift it up and aim at somebody, you can't do that because the camera is there. So you're gonna, I literally did that once. So it, like, I was all in the scene and everything. I went and lifted a rifle up and I hit the camera. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Oh my God, is it okay? You know, it's expensive equipment. So I had to Rambo the entire scene, and then in post, they would have to move that up. So just these little things take time. And with this, in this world, you know, it's extremely collaborative, but it's, and you know, you rely on the people who envisioned this world, envisioned the character, to tell you as much as possible because you can't see. You need to kind of get on the same page as quickly as possible. But ultimately, you want real actors to infuse character into every single move that you see. And some of the best examples of that is basically anything Naughty Dog has done recently.
Yeah, The Last of Us, that sort of thing.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for me, the most exciting thing about motion capture as it evolves, and of course full performance capture is becoming more and more prolific.
And that's where the actor is both captured, doing the face animation, doing the voice, all that sort of thing.
Exactly. Okay. Like, basically what Andy Serkis does for Planet of the Apes, yeah, and all that kind of
Gollum
stuff.
And...
Well, Gollum still had to be separately done. Like, what you used to have to do, especially for face, is, like, you do the general performance, and then you have to go into a separate room, sit still, and redo your entire performance just for the face, right? And possibly re-record the VO again. So it was kind of all disjointed. And now you can kind of do it all at the same time, especially because the tech has caught up that can handle the data influx. But for me, because of that, you know, the more markers you have, the more detail is captured. The more data you can absorb, the more detail, the more of the nuanced performance. You no longer have the, you know, the Sims kind of wave. You have finger animations, or, you know, if you go to the old Hitman games and you look at a guy who's repairing a car and he's literally just waving his arms like in a way where it kind of looks like he's wrenching something, but if you come around, he's literally doing absolutely nothing. And now, like the drummer, he'll be doing something, he'll be exact.
Yeah.
So as a performer, you no longer have to overact as much to show something. You no longer have to be as big. You have so much more of your performance read by the computer. You can really, you know, you pull at people's heartstrings. And I think as gamers, you guys will know how much this has evolved. You get a lot more emotionally involved with the characters these days.
Well, I mean, for that particular performance, I just sat back and let it roll. It was like a variety show. There was a kind of like a belly dancer, single woman with flames around her waist, holding other flames and fire poi type things. And I was just watching her because obviously the graphical detail was extremely high because it's a very high resolution game. The artistry was great. But I also knew that it was a real person that was performing. And I just sat back and watched it while I was having my dinner. And then there was another performance and then this musical number. And I just spent 15 minutes watching it. And it didn't feel like I didn't see myself watching animators who had manually done it. I knew I was basically watching an actual performance that had been interpreted by animators and graphical artists. And that was just very compelling. It drew me in and it made me want to watch this entire scene play out.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing with, you know, when something's really good, especially in visual effects, let's say if you go to Marvel movies, because motion capture is now prolific in movies as well, not just video games. When you look at this stuff now, it's just, I mean, I've kind of lost my train of thought a little bit because I was just so overwhelmed by this. Oh my God, it's so amazing. But, you know, you're drawn in and there's a new appreciation for the performance side of it. So much so that, well, in the movies, you know, you have an established way of working, like actors versus crew. In games, it's still very much, you know, usually directed by animators. Animators didn't go to film school. Mm. They have next to no directing training. They just have an idea and just want to try to communicate it to you and have you bring it to life in the right way. And, you know, they don't necessarily know what they're looking at until we're already off the volume, right? So that's an enormous amount of pressure on them, but also an enormous amount of pressure on the actor to sort of understand and get on the same page. And I really like the move towards, well, a lot of animation directors are now getting director training, but there's also mocap-specific directors that come from the actor side or the movie side. They come in and then kind of understand and they've bridged this world. And I know from my own performance that it takes it to a whole nother level, and that's what you want. And right now, yes, it's still a nice to have. Same thing with, I mean, I could go on a whole rant around safety and having a stunt coordinator on set, a fight coordinator on set, something that's, you know, absolutely standard on a movie set that in a mocap volume you will very seldom have. But nevertheless, the moves are there. You know, they're moving there, and they're also casting, even though, like, I could, like, my looks, apart from, let's say, my stature, have no impact on whether I get cast, right? It doesn't matter because it's just the movement that they're capturing. But they're still casting true to, you know, more and more to gender, to race, to background, because I believe that's kind of what you should do.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And there might be very slight differences. I don't know. You know, I mean, there certainly is.
in yeah, between races,
like you said about walking, you know, yeah. That simple thing that you wouldn't think about,
and facial and you know facial structure, I think yeah. as well.
And that's why you can usually hear whether like the ethnicity of a voice actor.
Yeah,
you can
definitely.
Hear it
yeah.
because of the differences in the shapes. That's why we're physically different, and so that all reads. I mean, is the biggest BS detector. The mocap set volume is like the biggest BS detector. You cannot fake things. You're either doing it or you're not. And it's great. It's a lot of pressure, but it's great. Facial animation, generally, is extremely difficult. There's a handful of people, relatively, in the world that are good at animating faces. And it is a painstaking process. I mean, for the most part, when you have the facial capture cameras, we have all the dots over your face and everything. Most of the time, a lot of that data is not usable, and it's just really good reference, right? And has to be, the faces have to be hand animated and fixed. And that's why when there's like these upper lip things, like weirdly moving upper lips, where, for example, one example of that sadly is the young Princess Leia, right, in the later Star Wars movies, where she just kind of, it's just that uncanny valley, you don't quite know, it's because this is just entirely frozen. I'm pointing, this is great for a podcast.
I'm here, so
yeah, exactly. Just
that.
The bit under the nose and everything just kind of feels weird. It's because faces, we're so expressive and we have so many muscles, so many like little things that happen, that in some ways, a fur-covered face can yeah. be a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Instead of our, you know, weird hairless faces. But, you know, you don't really have reference for a talking raccoon.
True. And also, the way they build those models, and I showed my kids this because they're a bit too young for the film, but I thought they would be fascinated to see Rocket. And but they build that animal, bones, flesh, you know, muscles, and that is such a... And I assume they do a similar thing for humans if they do it that way.
Yeah, they'll probably... I mean, it'll probably be a thing of where they don't do that from scratch for everything. There's probably stuff they can pull from and build onto, and animators, please correct me. But yeah, like I said, it takes a village. There's people who are specialists in all this stuff, because you not only have to build a character model, you have to rig it. And I imagine that would be a rigorous job, to show basically how points of what should move, and then basically match the mocap data, essentially, and I'm massively simplifying here, to the rig, so that the rig moves the way the data tells it to move, and then correct the 1 billion things you need to correct to make it match, and hopefully then you can, you know, work with it. But you'll constantly find things where, you know, the computer somehow made the wrong conclusion.
Well, I've learned an enormous amount. We'll have to get you back, Marta, and talk more about the stunt coordination side of the profession, which sounds like it will be full of intrigue and an injury. If you have any thoughts on what Marta has just blown our minds with, then do let us know. hello@uktechshow.com. We can pass questions along. We can accept petitions for her to return. I certainly would be very grateful of future informative sessions, Marta. So keep this space open. Luke in the chat room has already said signed, and he included an exclamation mark, which means that
wow.
You've got certainly at least
commitment.
One brand new fan here. But I'm sure they will be in their thousands when we publish this. But thank you, Marta, for joining us. Where, if people wanted to follow you, learn a bit more, hire you, whatever, what are you working on? Where can people find you?
So I am literally on everything social ever, but the best accounts are probably Twitter and Instagram, both of which my username is @martholio. Yes, that is a Beavis and Butthead reference.
I will make sure we include links to all of this stuff in the show notes, so do check it out. And Marta, thank you so much for being here. I would like to also thank Tom Merritt from Daily Tech News Show, who is about to tell us what's been happening in the wider world of technology over the last week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we talk with Chris Mancini about the increasing overlap between visual effects in movies and video games. Talk about what your responsibility is when reading and sharing the news. Discuss what it means that Larry and Sergey stepped down from Alphabet. Theorize that 2020 may be the year of the mid-range smartphone. And David Spark joins us to help understand why so many companies find getting the basics of security hard to implement. That and more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you very much, Tom. You know, I'm seeing Tom. I'm going to see some baseball with Tom next
year.
Are
you? Yep. Oh, nice. What, when?
June, I believe.
Lovely.
In London.
Ah.
Would you Adam and Eve it?
I would Adam and Eve it because you just told me.
I know. And I'd never lie to you.
Fair.
That's that. Thank you, patrons, for supporting us and keeping us in fresh supply of basically everything that we could ever possibly need to do a podcast with. So thank you, everybody. And I'm going to be in New York next week. I'm leaving in about 24 hours.
Ooh.
I do fully intend to do a show from New York, and Extra Message will be on cue as well for next week. But as to how that show will come together, I will have to both A, let you wait and see, and B, more importantly, find out for myself by figuring out before then. But in some form, I will see you next week, and thank you both for being here.
Yay!
Yay, thank you for having me.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.